morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Friday, June 26, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
We welcome Cameron from the Food for Thought Cafe crew, Permaculture on a Plate.
Hello.
The debate over renaming 39th Avenue Cesar Chavez Boulevard staggers on. Oh.
And Earl Blumenauer and Kurt Schrader work to make the business of killing people a little greener.
Portland area weather today mostly sunny, high near 73. Tonight mostly clear, low around 53. And a beautiful weekend with temperatures in the high 70s, low 80s, and sunny.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Terms like food forest are becoming increasingly familiar to the general public. If you're around Portland State University, you may have seen it growing all around you. My next guest is part of the Hands-On Revolution in Living Systems. Cameron's part of the Food for Thought Cafe Collective, and I hope I'm correct in calling it a collective.
Yes, it is a student-run cafe. We run cooperatively, and we use consensus decision-making to make all the decisions that we do make.
I got this straight off of the website. The Food for Thought Cafe Collective believes that food matters to the health of communities, individuals, and the planet. Our daily food choices make a difference to the local economy, to soil and water quality, to the lives of laborers here and abroad, and to our physical and spiritual health. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean when you say food choices make a difference to the local economy, to the soil?
Yeah, definitely. People are related to their ecosystem through what they eat. And so you can be aware of the impact of your choices by knowing where your food comes from, how it was grown, how it impacts the soil, and then what happens to the what in our culture we call waste or effluent afterwards. So your food choices literally impact your environment, and through your food you can choose to help your local economy, to have a positive impact on the ecology that surrounds you. Separate from that, you can also choose to be, somewhat ignorant of your environment.
Okay, that's theory. Talk about Food for Thought Cafe. What do you see first when you go out to PSU? How would you know that you're getting close?
Food for Thought Cafe is in the process of becoming more sustainable. It's actually we're actually in the process of turning it into a living laboratory for studying food systems. And so the process that we're using to progress is incorporating curricula into the cafe. What we're trying to aim for is eventually a sustainable plate of food, where when somebody orders, they are told where their food comes from, what impact it's having, and what impact their choice has, so they're aware of the power of their choice.
So a person could have a good conversation about these kind of issues just by showing up at the cafe.
Yeah, definitely. The cafe is a convergence spot for sustainability, discussions around sustainability and sustainable food and permaculture. There's several student groups that meet and have meetings and discussions surrounding sustainability, everything from food to energy to waste, all the different sectors of the discussion.
So we've got a food forest going there, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, right outside the cafe, we have some garden space right on the the south west corner of it, and we're establishing a little food forest there. We did a permaculture design in our permaculture class I took with you, Chris, and we're in the process of implementing that. It also involves the two greenhouses on campus and hopefully the Smith Center roof.
Everything. So essentially, Food for Thought Cafe reaches out into its immediate environs and uses every square inch of space in some productive way.
Yeah, eventually we'd like to see the university produce all of its food on campus. So
that's the goal.
Mm-hmm, that's the goal.
Okay, just to wrap up now, tell listeners, if you could, where the cafe is and how to get there.
All right, Food for Thought's in the basement of the Smith Memorial Student Union on campus. That's the main building that you'll see at Broadway and Hall, I believe. And you can just walk in the front doors, go down to the basement, and there'll be signs directing you there. Come on in and order plate food. We're open all summer. So, come on down and check us out.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Cameron with the Food for Thought Cafe at PSU. Listeners, be reminded, this is way more than just a cafe. It's a great cafe, wonderful vegetarian, vegan food, but it's so much more than that. Come on down to it and meet the people and see what they're doing. It's really an exciting and innovative project. My next guest falls into the same category of sustainability. ReWear is back. It's coming, and it's bigger and better than ever. Well, at least since the first one, says Michael Cook, my next guest. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Howdy. Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us on the airwaves. We have Cameron here from the Food for Thought Cafe, so it's kind of like family day here at Cascadia. First, can you tell listeners, what do you mean by ReWear?
Right. So that's ReWear, R-E-W-A-R-E, not like W-E-A-R. So it's like a ware, like a product or a commodity that's sold at a market. And this idea is that we're recycling and we're transforming waste to wealth with this ReWear market.
So, Michael Cook, you, of course, are with City Repair and one of the evil geniuses behind Village Building Convergence that I guess this is our ninth year, and the theme this year was momentum. ReWear is an active part of the momentum idea of how do we keep all of the themes and all of the projects, all of the ideas bubbling around in the VBC, how do we keep that going all year round? How does ReWear keep people involved and communities continuing to evolve?
Right. Well, we want to turn it into a cultural event. We want to turn it into a real, like, village marketplace that's going to be a continual part of the city. And it's a way to engage everyone. It's not for just commercial businessmen or entrepreneurs. It's for everyone with creativity, and it's for everyone with items to donate and resources to share. So it's more than just a standard market.
Michael, tell us, and of course, there's the art and entertainment aspect. You don't get that at home.
There's four parts to it.
Tell the listeners, if you could, then, where's the next and when is the next ReWear event?
So very simply, it's going to be the last Saturday of every month. That means tomorrow, June 27th. And it's going to be at 38th and Belmont. That's at the Northwest Battery Supply, which is a really amazing place. It's going to be about 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., but the last Saturday of every month.
So you don't have to live in the corporate world. You can. There are so many alternatives, and that is just one. Thank you so much. My guest has been Michael Cook with City Repair. Thanks for that, Michael.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Yesterday, the legislature passed one of its most contested environmental bills. House Bill 2186 allows adoption of a requirement to cut the carbon content of fuel in cars and trucks by 10% come 2020. It's the governor's biggest green victory this session. The low-carbon fuel standard is designed to reduce the state's dependence on foreign oil, cut greenhouse gas emissions, and end the effort to bring liquefied natural gas terminals and pipelines to Oregon.
Well, we'll see what happens there. This week up in Astoria, where the Battle of Bradwood Landing is being fought out, the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners only disagreed on one point at their meeting this week as they laid out ground rules for a hearing to resolve two issues on the proposed liquefied natural gas terminal at Bradwood Landing. At issue was how long to accept written comment from the public. After the usual back and forth, the board chose to place a deadline of July 6th for acceptance of written testimony. But before you start writing those angry letters about liquefied natural gas, be sure to take a look at their website and be aware of what other two issues are that are being considered at the next meeting, because if you don't have those in your letter, they're not going to take it into account.
You can sneak all kinds of things into a bill if you know the ropes, like the defense funding bill the House passed yesterday. Earl Blumenauer put in an environmental provision designed to reduce the impact of unexploded ordnance on public health and the environment. The bill, H.R. 2647, also includes a measure sponsored by Kurt Schrader that would protect soldiers from being unknowingly subjected to harmful chemicals while serving abroad. As for the Republicans, they marched in lockstep with their corporate overlords.
Here's another bait-and-switch greenwashing effort. Biomass, of course, is the buzzword of the week. So here's the reasoning. We need energy, and there's all this waste wood just lying around, so why don't we burn it to heat and air condition people who haven't learned to accept that climate is where they live. The fact is, in the forest, there is no such thing as waste. Everything is used. Fallen leaves and twigs become mulch. Fallen trees become nurse logs. General debris burns from time to time, as it should, to provide nutrients and a cascade of events that nurture a thriving ecosphere. But tucked into a huge climate change bill before Congress is a tiny paragraph that touches the federal forests covering a quarter of Oregon.
We all know feedlot food is full of feces, but poverty and outright denial still propel some of us over to the dark side. A Colorado company is recalling more than 41,000 pounds of beef sirloin and black Angus beef. The reason is fear it could be contaminated with a potentially deadly strain of E. coli. JBS Swift Beef Company initiated the recall after tests turned up E. coli 0157H7, which is usually found in cattle feces. The bacterium can cause violent cramping and diarrhea, and in some cases kidney failure, which can bring lifelong complications or even death.
I can understand E. coli in hamburger, but how do you get poop on a steak?
Mm.
You know? My imagination just hit a wall with that one.
Or cookie dough.
Well, I think I can understand that. Here's what happens when too many people flood into an agricultural area, build McMansions in rural places, and demand that their allergy needs be met. A bill to phase out most field burning by Willamette Valley grass seed farmers was approved yesterday by the Oregon Senate. It was one of the most contentious environmental debates of the 2009 session. The measure passed 60-14 after backers said that smoke causes health problems, particularly for people with asthma. Don't move to an agricultural area where they burn fields. Surely you must have noticed before you bought the McMansion that your place was surrounded by fields that need to be burned from time to time. That's the bottom line there.
FEMA just can't seem to stay out of the courtroom. Yesterday, environmental groups sued the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They say the agency failed to consider how its National Flood Insurance Program affects Oregon's federally protected salmon and steelhead. The National Wildlife Federation, the Audubon Society of Portland, and other groups say FEMA encourages building in flood-prone areas by providing insurance generally not available on the private market. Disaster is always good for business.
Always. The reality is that when a family lacks the money to provide housing, food, medical care, taxes are the last thing that the family worries about. But the state has got a law for the unfortunate thousands. The Senate has approved giving amnesty to Oregonians who don't always pay their taxes. The bill that passed yesterday would create, wait for it, a 50-day amnesty window this fall. This is a period when people and corporations can make good on unpaid back taxes and avoid paying penalties. So if you've got 50 days to become a millionaire, on your mark, get set, go.
Monsanto is synonymous with every sort of environmental depredation. But mining? Of course, that's where they get their chemicals. Federal regulators say an Idaho mine that Monsanto depends on to make its Roundup weed killer has violated federal and state water quality laws almost since it opened, sending selenium and other heavy metals into the region's streams. According to the EPA, violations at Monsanto's South Rasmussen mine near the Idaho-Wyoming border were documented starting in April 2002, 15 months after it won BLM approval.
And finally this. As the world knows, Michael Jackson died yesterday. He was 50 years old. A heart attack, apparently. Every media outlet across the world, smoke, drums, psychic vampires, loudly keened at the loss. But where were these voices when the man was alive? Who spoke out for him when he was being sued by a family of slack-jawed, gold-digging hicks? Jackson was reviled as a weirdo, a molester. You know, you heard it. In fact, you might have even participated in it. But now he's dead, and hypocrisy lives on.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Friday, June 26, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Todd Wilson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. And I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to your community radio station, Member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only helps us keep subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, part of a Noam Chomsky's recent speech on the global economic crisis introduced by Amy Goodman.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.